Well, happy Thursday to you, and welcome to another edition of Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan, and thank you for joining us via the radio waves, the telephone lines, the Twitter account, the email machine, and all the other ways we have to communicate together. Old-fashioned way, of course, is the telephone, 850-414-1234. It'll get you into the conversation or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. The Irish Repertory Theater of Tallahassee, in association with the Palaver Tree Theater down Crawfordville way, is going to be presenting Samuel Beckett's avant-garde masterpiece, Endgame. I didn't say Ender's Game, and it has nothing to do with the Marvel comic movie of the same name. January 31st and February 1st at 7:30 and February 2nd at 1:30. In the Carriage House on the grounds of the Goodwood Museum and Gardens. Then on February 7th and 8th at 7:30 and February 9th at 2 at the Palaver Tree Theater down on Shadeville Road in Crawfordville. That's as soon as you hit the courthouse, hang a left, and that'll get you there. The show sponsored in part by Jeff Mandel's generous donation, and additionally, COCA and Visit Tallahassee and the City of Tallahassee are providing grant money for the production. Now, in case you are not familiar with Samuel Beckett, we have one of the acknowledged experts about this playwright who is on our panel today and a whole bunch of other folks. So let's go around and meet those people right now. First, we want to say welcome back home, Gary Brame, after a three-decade exile in South Florida, where he directed scads of plays. Tallahassee theater buffs may recall your work here, Gary. In the 1980s, you were directing for the Tallahassee Little Theater and Tallahassee Community College and the late, great Etc. Theater. Some of us remember that. And then you fled in terror to South Florida and recently came back home. Well, first, welcome back. And what brought you back here?
Thanks so much. Basically, my family brought me back. My sister is a lobbyist, and she had her business in South Florida. She moved to Tallahassee to be a little closer to the government that is, you know, located here. And then my father had moved here after he retired until he passed last year. And so I had come back for some, you know, to help out with some family issues and things like that. I had always wanted to come back to Tallahassee. I was here from 1981 to 1989. Had a great run working in the local theater groups around here, and especially Etc. Theater, Theater Tallahassee. It used to be the Tallahassee Little Theater when they had a little tiny stage back then. Fortunately, when I came back a couple of years ago, there were just enough people around still in town, like Jim McMurtry, Jeff Mandel, and Herb Donaldson, who now has Palaver Tree out in Crawfordville, was about 15 or 16 years old when I cast him as a student in two plays of mine in about 1985 and 1986. So I've become reacquainted with some of the people that I knew here a long time ago, and it's eased my passage back into directing back in Tallahassee, and it's been great.
A grand and glorious homecoming for sure. Well, if we're going to talk about Samuel Beckett, we better talk to Stan Guntarski. He is a Robert O. Lawton Distinguished Professor of English at FSU, and as the aforementioned expert on the works of Samuel Beckett, many volumes you have edited and compiled about Beckett. How many, Stan?
It's become a bit of an obsession. I've probably done about 25 books on Beckett, and it shows no sign of abating.
Your source of fascination with this guy, where did that
come
from?
Well, there's an old adage about great art. The more you look at it, the more things open up, the more things you find. And so as I keep coming back to Beckett, there are more interesting things that are revealed. And also, as it turns out, Beckett is in the news these days again, 30 years after his death. He won the Nobel Prize in 1969, and it was not without controversy. Most of that controversy has been suppressed during that time. Those files have just been reopened. So we get some insight into what that controversy was. And a lot of the objection was a vision of Beckett that's now pretty much passé, that he's a sort of a poet of despair and nihilism, rather than an accurate depictor of certain aspects of human behavior. Fortunately for us, the pros won out over the cons in 1969, although he was not all that happy about winning the Nobel Prize. And the famous quotation from his wife when she heard the news was, she said, what a catastrophe. Partly because they—
Love you too, honey.
They, well, I mean, that's probably Beckett's notion as well. But what it meant is that their lives were going to be disturbed considerably. And he entertained the notion of turning it down. But he had a model of another Frenchman, Jean-Paul Sartre, who turned it down and then realized how much money he had turned down, changed his mind, went back to the Nobel Committee, and they said, no. You rubbed our nose in it once. That's it. So Beckett didn't turn it down but didn't show up for the award and tried to keep his distance from it to preserve something of his private life.
Yeah, but Endgame is not this dark dystopian vision. There actually is some comedy in this.
It is. One of the notable things is that when Beckett translated his first produced play into Waiting for Godot from the French, En Attendant Godot, he changed the title a bit. He added a subtitle to the English version and called it a tragic comedy, so that almost always there's this intersection between possibilities of tragedy, almost always undercut by comic moments.
Well, let's see what it's like to actually put this into a life context on the stage, because we've also got Jim McMurty here with us, board chair of the Irish Repertory Theater, but taking the stage this go-around, playing the role of Ham in Endgame.
Yes, Tom, very excited to do that. As Stan mentioned, it's a work as an actor that you continue to find more and more levels to. It's a challenge, it's a thrill, and it's some of the hardest work I've done, but that's when you're an actor, that's some of the most rewarding work you do. It's there are a few plays that are that well written that you could do for years and still continue to find more material. I kind of think of it as a jazz musician, as opposed to there's not a straight storyline. It's not a tale to be told or a ballad. There are so many levels and impressions made. Beckett seems to take you right to the edge of an idea and then backs off and lets you continue. You think about it, take it home. You walk away from a Beckett play with deep, deep thoughts, and it lives with you for a long time.
So this is not a passive audience kind of exercise here. You kind of have to dig into this, go along for the ride, and then start synthesizing. Okay, what did I just see? What did I just hear?
Exactly. It's like an abstract impressionist painting. It's like a blank verse or free verse in poetry. I think there's been a resistance in theater to an audience that likes to have a nice, neat story that they can take home, tap their feet, and that sort of thing. This is art, and it encourages thinking, and it encourages investigation. And nobody does it better than Beckett, I don't think.
Well, you know, we couldn't talk about the Irish Repertory Theater without bringing Lanny Thomas back into the conversation here. His past directorial credits include things like Irish Folk Tales and the Shahran Terminus and The Importance of Being Earnest, of course, which was the last thing we were talking about in this very room here, Lanny. Good
Indeed.
To see you.
Nice
and
to see you too,
what
Tom.
Possessed you to, as artistic director of the theater, say, we gotta do a Beckett thing here?
Well, I had always wanted to do Endgame because actually it's my favorite Beckett. I like it. I think it's much better written. Not much better written, but I think it's deeper in a way than, and Godot has been done forever. There was a production on Broadway with Robin Williams and who was
Steve Martin.
Steve Martin, right. So, I mean, it's been out there. And I don't think Endgame has gotten the kind of exposure that it should have gotten, and especially not here in Tallahassee. One of the things that is very important about this particular production is that actually Stan worked with Samuel Beckett on this version, and it has not been done. It's only been done in London, San Francisco, and Tallahassee. So this is the third production of this version of it, which is a further, what would you say, a revision?
I think one of the curiosities is that Beckett realized that there's something about theater where you, as an artist, as a writer, you tend to lose control of the project at some point. That is, what you write has to get turned over to another whole group to deal with it as they think best. Beckett finally decided to direct some of his own work. And being a incurable tinkerer, like maybe every writer is, every time he went back to the play or almost anything he's written, he changed it a good deal. And as a director, he made significant changes well after the play is already published both in England and the United States. So this version of the play is the one we worked out from his theatrical notebooks. It has just been published in paperback late last year by Grove Press in the United States and Faber and Faber in London.
You wouldn't happen to know who wrote that?
I edited it. The play is still written by Beckett, and I actually wrote notes to the play, which Beckett then oversaw.
Hold that thought, Stan. We'll be back and continue that discussion right here on Perspectives as we talk to members of the Irish Repertory Theater about the upcoming production of Endgame by Samuel Beckett. More on that in just a moment. Stick around. We are back on Perspectives, the Irish Repertory Theater folks here to talk about the upcoming production of Samuel Beckett's Endgame, both here in Tallahassee and also at this really cool theater down in Crawfordville. More on that to come. Hey, a reminder, though, that you can always catch Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to our website, click on Radio, pull down the local programs menu, and you will have a variety to select from. You choose Perspectives, and then that'll take you to the archive page where we try to have the most recent program up within 24 hours when it actually appears on the radio. You can go back and listen to it as many times as you want. Stan Gontarski, who actually worked with Samuel Beckett on this particular iteration, I guess we could call it, Stan, of Endgame there. So this kind of takes it as close to the concept of the author maybe as we can get?
I think that's accurate. Had Beckett done it again, he would have changed it again. The book that comes out on this is part of a series called The Theatrical Notebooks of Samuel Beckett. And he directed it twice, each time changing the play. I was lucky enough in 1980 to get invited to Beckett's directing in London. So I watched him for almost 3 weeks work through the play for one of those iterations. And then shortly after that, he decided that he would allow these theatrical notebooks that he kept for each of those productions to be published. And so that came out in 1995, and the publishers were very slow about bringing out the paperback edition. But that came out late last year, and Gary was all over that. excited about doing a slightly different version of the play where certain things get foregrounded more than in the original version. So between 1957, when the play was first done in London, and 2019, a lot of that work that Beckett did on the play was difficult to get a hold of.
So Gary Brame, as director of this version then, is it a is it good or bad to have a collaborator of the original author kind of working with you and saying, no, I don't think Sam would have done it this way, Gare?
You know, he doesn't say that. He's very much told me, you know, that this is your production. You're the director of the production. You should do with the play what you think is best done with the play. And I've met with him in his office. He said he's happy to, you know, advise me about certain questions that I have about the play, discuss with the actors questions that they have about the play. But, you know, anytime you hand a play over to a director, just because the theater is a collaborative art, by its nature, what I do with the play, it is impossible to do what anybody else has done with it. I've got four actors who haven't appeared in the play before. I haven't directed the play before. I've been handed this revised text, which is great. There are certain aspects of the play that are illuminated from the previous text that I've known for about 40 years now, mostly that there's a sharpening of the relationship, the master and servant relationship, if you will, that Ham and Clove have, and a lessening perhaps of what used to be a bit of a meta quality that the play had, where there was some awareness on the parts of the characters in the play that they may have been observed somehow by an outlying audience. That's reduced a little bit. There's a line here and there that's removed. There's a bit of physical action that has been removed. There are some things that are added. Sometimes it's several sentences. Sometimes it's just a phrase. Sometimes it's it's a small bit, and it's a bit and piece here and there. The play was assembled. The professor's introduction to the theatrical notebooks Endgame says that the play was assembled by fragments. He had a long section here, another section there, a section here. So it wasn't like Godot, where he sat down and constructed a play beginning to end with a certain patterning in mind. The fragmentary nature of it is what we've assembled into this script that we have now, and is in one of the things that I've been talking to the actors about, how it continues to morph all the time, so that there are moments of high comedy, there's low comedy, there's some pathos, there's some melancholy, and so that you have to be careful when you construct the play that there are all these different tonal qualities to what you're asking your actors to bring to the table, and it changes on you all the time. So you have to be very careful what you say to the actors about what this moment may require as opposed to the others, because there's no through line of what I call a tonal quality to the play. It is kind of always becoming something else. It has moments that I think are very funny. There are moments that are very, I use the word melancholy again. I came to Beckett probably like most people through my awareness of Godot. I was 19 years old. I read the play in a drama class. It made me furious because I didn't understand anything about it. And what I did was I went to books and I said, there's a poetic kind of a quality to this play. There is a quality of literature to this play that I really, I'm hearing it, but I don't have a frame of reference to understand what it is that I'm reading at 19. So I went to an early biography. I read a couple of the novels. There's a famous trilogy that starts with a book called Malloy, goes on to Malone Dies, and ends with The Unnameable. So I went and I read some of the novels. Which I encourage people to do who are interested in Beckett. I'd be quite frank and say that he was awarded the Nobel Prize, I think, as Stan mentioned, for the quality of his novels. So Endgame is an experience that changes every night based on new discoveries, like Jim says, that an actor can make. It's a collaborative. Every play I think that I try to do is a collaborative relationship between myself and the cast of the play to decide what is the best way to render this series of events onto a stage so that an audience can understand it. And I think one of the big misunderstandings about Beckett is that it is somehow unapproachable, and it's just not. It's very clever. It's very funny. There's a lot of wordplay. There's a lot of points where I think that a contemporary audience can identify with the events of the play, particularly if you've ever been in one of these relationships where it's like, I don't know if I should be leaving this relationship or I should stay in this relationship, or if I leave this relationship, what's going to happen to me on the other side? And the relationship between Ham and Clove, the two characters in the play, is very much like is an exploration of that. So there you have it.
Well, there you have the essence also of the storyline, if you will, which is not necessarily a linear. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful princess who lived in a big castle, and you have that thing. Yes. So Jim McMurdy, as Ham, you have to, as you were saying before, with this impressionistic type of approach, make that person alive and relevant to the audience so they know, oh, what is this should I stay or should I go pathos that you're going through?
Yes. Well, there's a fight and an attempt to find order out of life, which is never going to give us the order that we want from it. And there's the fight between the order and the desire to break out and do something and to find something new, to learn, to grow. There's a comfort zone that I think we all have of the familiar. And so there's an attempt to keep things into the familiar and keep the routine, the structure that keeps our life predictable, in conflict with the desire to reach out and to become something new, to learn something, to not fall into a rut and to not to live your life in basically a little maze. It's fun and it's challenging, and it's great philosophy for approaching life, is that you want to be out there learning and growing. And
it's a universal story. It is something everyone can relate
yes.
to.
Yes, and there is a real juxtaposition there. We do all want an element of order in our life. It keeps us comfortable, and yet that order can also be very confining. And so we look to find something to get us out into the world and into some new adventures.
Well, this is a production that is itself not confined, because, Lanny Thomas, you've got two venues that you're going to be staging this in.
We do. We're going to do the first three performances at Goodwood Museum and Gardens, our favorite place. And then we're going to go down for the following weekend down at the Palaver Tree Theater down in Crawfordville, which if you have not been there, you should go, because it's what we would authentically call a black box theater. And that's a very different sort of way, because it's a theater that you can configure any way you want and it can change. And that's not usually the case for theaters here in Tallahassee. There was one other thing that I did want to talk about, and that was that there may be people who don't know Beckett and don't know the mindset that Beckett has or uses in his literature. And as it happens, there are four short films that Stan had worked on that are going to be shown at the Tallahassee Film Society. So it's down there at Railroad.
All Saints Cinema.
All Saints Cinema. That's what I was trying to think of. And that would be happening on the Wednesday night before we open. So that would be the 29th. Because we open on the 31st.
Okay, so that's a good primer then, Stan, for folks who really want to get into the play to get the thought process maybe of this particular guy and what he brings to his stories and his characters.
I think the films present a different sense of Beckett. I've been working on these films off and on for a very long time. Some of them come from productions I did at the Magic Theater in San Francisco. Some of them come from a series of films I was making in Poland the last couple of years, so some of them are quite new. But they bring a different aspect. They're all ghost stories in one way or another. So that's a point that people can relate to, I think, pretty easily, even though they are, as Gary said about his first encounter with Waiting for Godot, there's a poetic quality to that. And one way or another, writing narrative, writing theater, Beckett's a poet. And that comes to the fore over and over again. So what it does is foreground an idea, and that is that the impact of a lot of this work is not necessarily trying to figure out what exactly that means, but the kind of impact the imagery has on one. The contemporary term for this is affect. You know, even if you can't articulate what your emotion is responding to, somehow you wind up with goosebumps or a chill or some sort of emotional response, even if you can't explain exactly what causes it.
So you've really got to suspend, I guess, a little bit of expectation going into this. Gary, would that be accurate?
What it is for me, I think, is that people have become accustomed to conventional character and plot structure in plays and drama, where you gather four or five characters together that have certain mindsets, you throw some obstacles in their way, you watch these four or five people deal with the obstacles, and they come out on the other side of this dealing with these obstacles illuminated in some way or not. These characters tend to have verifiable backgrounds, wants, desires. When you usually talk to actors about, you know, taking on a role in a play, you say, well, what does this guy want? What's he willing to do to get it?
What's my motivation?
What is my motivation? Yeah, you hear that all the time. I even try not to use that word so much. It just so to enter into a world where that information is not supplied by the writer to you, you have to ask a different set of questions because you're not operating by the normal rules. So what Beckett has done is to dramatize a particular type of situation and ask you to bring something of yourself to the table and insert yourself into the world of this play, kind of allow it to wash over you, if you will. And what you take away from it is what you will, and probably for me at least, as valid as what anybody else takes away from the play, because it's about what has it meant to you to experience this world.
And I think that the name of the play, the title of the play, is emblematic of that, because it's a chess term.
It is.
Isn't it, Jim?
The end section of a chess game when the outcome is sort of seen where we're headed and it's playing out the final moments of it. It's a little bit about life, the end game of life, how we accept or fight the inevitable. The resistance to it, the denial of it, and eventually the acceptance, hopefully.
Yeah, but that doesn't have to be death. That could be
Ham's
situation
the
there.
The relationships we were just talking about. Yes. Yes, very much.
I think to follow up, I mean, Endgame itself has a almost contradictory term, because it is the term that's given to this final portion of a chess game. But it doesn't always lead to checkmate. There is a possibility of stalemate at the end, which means that after all that work, you get to start all over again, which is something itself of a metaphor for theater. They will do this one night and reach maybe not a resolution, but the next night they'll come back and do the same thing. So, you know, Endgame has this kind of double edge to it.
Now, and as a director, Gary, you've seen that too. You can have the same cast. you can be in the same place. Even the audience can be similar. And one night will be soaring and everything clicks and the connection between what's going on the stage and the audience is just transcendent and it's wonderful and terrific. And the next night it all falls flat.
And I absolutely encourage that. One of the actresses in the play plays Nell last night asked me before we started, she says to me, at what point do you want us to try to set something? And I said, I don't want you to ever try to set something. You should always be open to listen to what you're getting from the other actors on the stage and react accordingly, given the guidelines that are provided by the text. Theater should be different every night. An audience will react differently every night. They will feed you a different kind of energy every night, and that's okay. What I try to encourage is to walk out on the tightrope of not knowing what it can be every night, and don't fear failure. I would rather have something that is alive and breathing and present in a present moment than something that becomes stale by the rote repetition of something that your director says, oh, I like that, which to me I think is deadly. As soon as you tell an actor, that's great, then they say, oh, well, if you like that, wait till I do that tomorrow night because it's going to be even better. And the night after that will be even better than that. And then you've landed up on something stale.
We'll be right back and talk more about Beckett's Endgame here on Perspectives in just a moment. Don't run off. The Irish Repertory Theater's production of Samuel Beckett's Endgame coming up very shortly. Here in Tallahassee and also in Crawfordville, we have an all-star cast, if you will, our panel here on Perspectives to talk about the upcoming production and what it means. And Stan Gontarski, let's continue that discussion here about how there is a real Florida connection besides your collaboration with Samuel Beckett, but in his plays. First one here?
Indeed. 1956, before the play was scheduled to open on Broadway, the producers were looking for venues out of town to test out the work. And the Coconut Grove Playhouse had just reopened after a long period of time. And the producers decided that they would try out the play in Miami, or Coral Gables, actually, at the Coconut Grove Playhouse. They sort of doomed that production because they billed it as the laugh hit of two continents. And so they were appealing to people who left the Fontainebleau pool, drinks still in hand in their cabana shirts, coming to this play to be wildly entertained.
A light, rollicking comedy.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. You can guess it did not go well. The director was immediately fired. The play went to New York, but with a different director, and had a fairly successful run. But that Coconut Grove Playhouse was also a place where another iconic American director, Tennessee Williams, was working on Sweet Bird of Youth, and he came and saw the production and became one of its few champions. Williams was in a sort of crisis himself, looking for a way to write a different kind of play, and was just overwhelmed by Beckett, so much so that he was one of the investors in the New York production. The point of this extended anecdote is that it has to do with the expectations you have going into any art form, film or live theater. If you come expecting either light entertainment or something to be brought together cleanly and neatly at the end, you're bound to be disappointed somewhat because Beckett never thought it was the writer's job to pull everything together. In his mind, That's what readers and audience members do. You know, that's your job to pull this together, to see how these images resonate with you.
So, Jim McMurdy, as Ham on that, are you tasking the audience with, hey, help me figure me out?
A bit of that, yes. I think that's a good way to put it. I react as the situation requires, and hope that because of the writing, that the audience then will. We don't tie up anything with ribbons and neat ends. It's all left there. There are 90-degree angles. Sometimes we take a complete turn, and where that turn happens, usually there's a moment there that the audience registers. I think, as Stan said, there's the tingling, the moment that will come and recur to you days through the evening, through your life. Probably you'll have these little moments to say, "Oh, I remember Beckett. You know, Beckett touched upon this when I saw Endgame." And so you just sort of play the moment, and the moment is written for the audience to take home. It'll stay with them. This writing is so good, the poetry of it is so good that it will live with you, and it will stay, whether it's one or two lines out of the play. It's like a poetry jam, slam or jam. If you may not follow every bit of that poetry, but there are going to be lines through those poems that say, "Oh, that spoke to me, it touched me deeply," and you take it home with you, and that's. But that's the art I look for in any kind of work. You know, we do the craftsmanship, but you have to take it that step beyond with the art that really lives with people and an audience takes home with them. So,
well, Lanny Thomas, it sounds like that's one of the imperatives here of Irish Repertory Theater. If you look over what you guys have done in the past, is to have productions that essentially grow on you, as Jim was saying.
I think that's something that Tallahassee needs, and that we have been able, this is our 12th year, that we've been trying to do scripts that push the envelope a little bit, or that talk about Irish theater. We did O'Casey, and we did some of the newer Irish playwrights. Wonderful stuff, really amazing kind of literature that's come out recently in Ireland. And I just had a question, Gary. Did you cut out the tap dancing number?
We cut the tap dance.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. it's in the director's cut. I'd like to say one thing if I can. The part of Clove is one of the most difficult roles that I have ever tried to direct an actor in. There's a young actor named Caleb Goodman in town who is making an absolutely heroic effort to do what I've asked him to do in this play. It's an extraordinarily difficult role to take on, and I just my hat is off to him, and also to a local actor named Alan Kagan, who is playing Nag, who has no legs and lives in a garbage can for the 84 minutes of the play, and Tahira Lee, who also has no legs and resides in a garbage can on the other side of Nag. The actors actually have legs. The characters don't. We put them in garbage cans for the duration of the performance. But I just wanted to mention the other people who are involved in the production, and all of them have done a really good job of bringing the best that they've got to the table, I think.
So, Stan Gentarski, since you have collaborated with the master on this, I presume that you have been part and parcel of at least some of the rehearsals and all that?
I've kept my distance a bit. We've had a lot of conversations with Gary about what this new text suggests, but I've yet actually look at it, a rehearsal, which I will do either today or tomorrow. But I never wanted to be in a position where I imposed what I think about the play on Gary. Part of the interest to me is watching the way he sees this play and the actors see this play. I already know what I think. And I've written about it a good deal. And I've directed this play myself in San Francisco with a wild, erratic actor who was part of the San Francisco meme troupe and had the difficulties that Gary was talking about. He played Clove in that production. So I have a pretty good idea what I think about the play. What interests me is what other people think about it, and that's what I will see in this production.
Okay. Stan's been great about making sure that this is my vision of the play, which I both very much appreciate and also want him to be there every other night at 7 so that he can correct all of the significant mistakes that I've made trying to stage the play. I can imagine that when we have a conversation about it in the next night or two, he'll probably point out some moments here or there. I certainly hope he will. He's very much adamant about leaving me my space as a director to stage the play that I think is best for our audience at this particular time. As a collaborative relationship, he's been there to answer every question that I've had. I've passed on questions from actors to him, just to have someone of his considerable wealth of knowledge about Beckett as an individual and as a writer. I've sat in his office for a couple of hours at a time wondering, am I taking up too much of this man's time here? And he's never indicated to me that he was in a hurry or too busy to talk to me. It's been great and really one of the most rewarding collaborative relationships I've had, to have someone of his stature at my disposal to ask questions about how can I handle some of the difficult material and issues that are taken up by the play, and I really appreciate his time.
At the same time, though, if we have learned anything from the folks around this table today, it's not just what Beckett brings to you, it's what you bring to Beckett.
Indeed.
I close the sequence of films that the Tallahassee Film Society is doing, a sequence of four films, with a slide which has one of the quotations from a play called What Where, which is the last play that Beckett had worked on. And it says simply, make sense, who may.
That's
something of a theme.
Yeah.
That's something of a theme.
Yeah. Well, again, that is going to be going on next Wednesday, the 29th, at All Saints Cinema. That group of films, to give you at least some kind of context as to where this guy's coming from. And Stan, I can't let you go before. What was he like to work with? Because, again, you get this image of this very intense, deep, morose, humorless, almost apocalyptic type of personality. Yeah. What was Samuel Beckett?
Intense, yes. Morose, no. He was wildly funny. And in all conversations you have with him, his principal interest was not the despair of the world or metaphysical predicaments. He was interested in gossip, mostly. who you saw... You know, did you see so-and-so while you were in London, or things of that nature? And rather than being reclusive, as I said earlier, I went to rehearsals in 1980 at the Riverside Studios in London when he was directing Endgame. But I was not the only spectator there. There were lots of friends who he invited in, actresses. Irene Wirth was there. People who might do his stuff at one point or another. Different kinds of scholars. A guy who wrote a book on brain surgery was there, and Beckett loved talking to him because he had just dealt with what was then a fairly new surgical procedure for dealing with aneurysms. And that has to do with clipping the artery. And part of the interesting thing of that conversation, he said, you know, the surgery is almost without problems, except every once in a while, the person who received the surgery feels like something is dripping in their head. Oh,
this is a straight, you know, a straight line
from, you know, I mean, obviously Beckett didn't know this. It's something he intuited one way or another. But it became, you know, a sort of point of interest because, you know, this is, the book is called The Brain Surgeon. You know, it's about the only drawback to the surgery that they could figure out. But Beckett was, jovial, but as a director, he never carried the text. That is, he memorized it completely before, so he didn't have to look down. He could, you talk about his concentration and intensity, keeps his eyes on the actors at all times. But he's the kind of director that wouldn't work very well these days because he did line readings. What he did essentially was say it like this.
So Jim, more fun and more flexibility working than with Gary, right?
A lot more freedom with Gary, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's been very generous about allowing me to seek out the ham that I want to create and just gives me – He's what I like in a director, and he is an audience for me. He gives me an idea that this is something that will not read with an audience. Try this, you know, that sort of thing. And other than that, I'm free to interpret as, you know, as I see.
You're empowered.
Exactly. There we go. Exactly.
Only a few minutes remaining in our perspectives overview of the upcoming production of Samuel Beckett's Endgame. And Lanny Thomas, if we could prevail upon you to again give us the rundown of the where's and when's and how to find out more before you go.
Well, one of the things that we didn't talk about was that we're going to have Professor Guntarski is going to be giving a chat before opening night on Friday, and then we'll be around for a Q&A with the director and the cast after on Friday on opening night. As it happens, that has been such a draw that we would like to announce. Oh, there's also – he will also do that in Palaver on the closing matinee on the 9th. But it's been such a draw that we would like to announce right now, for the first time ever, you heard it here first, that we're also going to do a Q&A at all of the shows at Goodwood. And that will be the director and the cast for sure. And we're twisting Stan's arm to come and visit us for those kinds of things. So that may he may also be there. Anyway, so we're starting on opening night on January 31st at the Carriage House at Goodwood, and there's a 7:30 reception from 7:30 to 8. On opening night, Stan will start at 8 and give a talk, and then whenever that's over, then the play will begin, and then after the play is over, there will be a talk back. So on Saturday, it's also at 7:30. With the reception at Goodwood, and then there'll be a Q&A after the show. The show will begin at 8. And then on Sunday, the matinee, 1:30 is the reception, and 2 o'clock is when the play will begin, and then there'll be a Q&A after the play is over. Then we move to the next week on Friday down in Crawfordsville at the Palaver Tree Theater. They will be Friday night and Saturday night are 7:30, and there will be talkbacks after each performance down there also. And then on Sunday, there's Professor Guntarski will be there to talk beforehand, and then have and be part of the Q&A on Sunday. So that's a 1:30. Wait, no, it's 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Okay. 2 o'clock. Sorry, and the show will begin at 2:30. After Professor Guntarski's talk. We also know about the films that are coming up next Wednesday night at the Tallahassee Film Society. And thank you, John, for taking us and helping us out. I wanted to let you know that if you want to order tickets, you can order tickets for Goodwood at TallahasseeIrishRep.com. And we also have a Twitter account at Rep Irish and Instagram account at Tallahassee Irish Rep.
All
so there's
platforms.
Any number of ways to get to us.
Lanny Thomas, Jim McMurdy, Professor Guntarski, and of course Gary Brain, thank you all for coming in and talking about the upcoming production of Beckett's Endgame here on Perspectives. Perspectives produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Evan Rossi and Lido Rawls on the technical side, and I'm Tom Flanagan. You know, everyone talks about affordable housing. What's being done about it locally? We'll find out next week right here on Perspectives.
Perspectives is a production of WFSU Public Media. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts.